You're listening to the Food Freedom Life Podcast. My name is Brittany Allison, and I spent 6+ years stuck in diet binge cycles, hating my body and envying others who seem to have it all because I never felt enough. What I discovered in my journey to food freedom and becoming a registered dietitian is this: you can either live your life at war with your mind or learn to work in sync with it. So if you're ready to learn how to be in tune with yourself and evolve your life, welcome to the show. All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Food Freedom Life Podcast. The other day when I was thinking about what do I want to do for this week's episode, I was kind of thinking about what would be really, really helpful for me if I sent myself back in time to when I was first starting healing my relationship with food and my body image, my relationship with exercise, my relationship with myself, really, when it comes down to it. What would be the most helpful thing for me to hear if I were listening to the podcast? And so what I really want to talk about today is if I were to be trying to get out of the diet binge cycle again at this point in time, what would I do? And so getting into the top 5 things that I would focus all of my attention on, all of my energy on to really help me feel normal around food again, to stop thinking about food all the time, be able to navigate situations where there's going to be food or I'm going to be with certain people that maybe I don't feel totally comfortable around, or I'm wearing an outfit that leaves me more exposed, whatever it is. What are the 5 things that I would really go back and tell my former self that, okay, you need to focus on these to really start your healing process, to get unstuck and to get out of this place that just feels like a never-ending cycle with food? Here is what I would do. Because honestly, I didn't always make the best choices in my recovery in the beginning. I did it on my own. If you want to hear more about my recovery story, my eating disorder story, go back all the way to episode 1. I get all into it. I talk about all the details of what happened and what I was going through and how I healed. But yeah, I did it on my own, and that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. You can do it on your own. However, I definitely made a lot of wrong turns along the way, made a lot of mistakes. Looking back, I would not do it the same way again. I have learned a lot from the process, and of course from my education, doing extra courses, working with clients, just time as well. I've learned a ton, and that's really why I think there's so much value in getting help and not trying to do it on your own, because it ends up going a lot smoother, a lot faster. You really understand where you're struggling and where you're stuck a lot quicker. You see all of your blind spots that you just on your own are obviously blind to. You can't see them. Plus, I think working with somebody, there's this extra layer of accountability that is sometimes really hard to hold yourself to when you are having to take steps that are unfamiliar and new and scary, right? It's a lot easier to stay in that safe space that is not necessarily serving you. It's in a way contributing to a lot of the patterns with food that you ultimately want to get out of. But working with somebody helps you feel more confident that yes, I am taking the right steps. There is a plan. I see where I am now and where I'm going to get to, and this person can guide me along the way. And that's just something that I really didn't have. And so it took more time to push myself and to get into that place of discomfort on my own. Whereas, yeah, it would have been a lot smoother along the way. And so here are the 5 things that were really in my blind spots that kept me in the place of overeating frequently, feeling kind of chaotic around food, feeling like I was making really impulsive and snap decisions around food, binging, just not feeling like I had a good handle on what to eat and what was like normal to eat, and also just feeling really out of touch with my body. So let's get into it. The first thing that I would do if I could go back in time and talk to my former self is to tell her to put weight loss on the back burner. A major question for a lot of people, and maybe you included, is what happens to your weight when you begin healing your relationship with food, when you start the journey to food freedom? And when I was really in this mental hellhole of binge eating, compulsive eating, emotional overeating, I was so paralyzed in the fear of gaining weight in the process that it kept me from really taking meaningful steps forward in my journey for so long. It kept me from really getting to where I wanted to be in my relationship with food. The focus on weight really held me back. And I know the fear for me, at least if you're anything like I was, the fear was that in the past, anytime I did ease off of my rules and my diet and decide that I could just let myself indulge a little, I would spiral out of control, or at least what felt like spiraling out of control. And it felt like I couldn't stop myself from eating. Like, it was just, holy crap, if I don't go back to having control over my food, I spiral out of control, I eat everything in sight, so I have to stick to this plan. And the fear was so real for me that if I really pursued this journey, I felt like I might end up just gaining weight forever. That fear was so heavy for me that it kept me stuck. It kept me from taking action for so long. And so I want to talk this through a little bit, this idea of putting weight loss on the back burner and make it not so overwhelming, because that idea is a lie anyway. You're not going to spiral out of control forever and never be able to stop the weight gain. And you're also not signing your life away in a contract that says you're never allowed to try to lose weight ever again, right? One of the main reasons putting weight loss on the back burner is so important is that it helps tackle this Last Supper mentality, which is the mindset that, okay, I'm gonna do better tomorrow. I'm gonna be really healthy on Monday. Or even, okay, I'm gonna get started on this journey to healing my relationship with food. And, I'm never gonna be able to eat this food again or eat this much again, or I'm never gonna be able to binge again. So I might as well get it all in right now. I might as well eat as much as I can right now because I know I'm going to start cleaning up my act on Monday or next week or next month or whatever it is. And so that Last Supper mentality can cause us to eat more. But if you're not putting all your focus on weight loss, there's nothing to start over for. So there's no reason to punish yourself and wipe the slate clean. And when it comes to your weight, the reality is that your body likes to be in homeostasis. And what that means is that your body has a weight range that it feels and functions most optimally within. And this is commonly referred to as your weight set point. Set point theory describes how an individual body is genetically programmed to stay within a certain weight range. As a person loses weight or gains weight, their body compensates to get back into that set point range. It's the place, it's the range of weight that your body feels best in. Everything functions best within this weight range. You're mentally functioning well, you're functioning well physically, your hormones are regulated best. It's estimated that the average person has a set point range of about 10 to 15 pounds. Without any external interference like dieting or restricting, our bodies respect our set point weight range, even if society and culture do not. But this system is a very delicate balance, and it only works in the way it's supposed to if we let it. That said, your set point weight range is not set in stone, right? It can change over time due to things like genetics, weight loss attempts, hormonal shifts, aging. And that's because, despite what diet culture says, you aren't meant to stay at the same weight range for your entire life. For many people, their set point weight falls on the higher end of the spectrum into maybe the overweight or obese BMI categories. And this is completely normal. We're not all meant to have the same size body, just as we're not all meant to have the same height, foot size, hair color. Something that's really important to know as well is that dieting or manipulating food and exercise to try to control your weight, it messes with the body's system and this delicate homeostasis. It starts to break down. Your body fights harder and harder to regain control of your weight regulation mechanism. And your body pulls out basically all the stops to try to keep your weight within its genetically programmed set point range. That means that whenever you drop lower than your set point, your body feels threatened, like it thinks starvation is coming, a famine is coming, and so it does everything it can to help you regain weight, even if you're not trying to. What it also does is it decreases your metabolic rate, your thyroid activity decreases, your levels of fullness hormone decrease, your levels of hunger hormones increase, your desire for calorie-dense foods increase. And biologically, this makes sense. If you were really starving, calorie-dense foods and an increased appetite would be an excellent way to save your life. And these biological mechanisms that kick in after dieting is why 2/3 of people not only regain the initial weight that they lost after the diet, but also put on some extra pounds after the diet. Your body increases your weight a bit higher than it was before to protect against subsequent attempts at weight loss. And our set point range may even go higher than it was before. Your body may favor being at a higher weight in order to protect you from future attempts. With every attempt to diet, the rate of weight loss slows down, which is why you might find that the weight comes off really easily during your first diet, but diets after that don't always have the same results. It gets harder and harder. And like I said before, chronic dieting, it can increase your set point weight range. And this biological response, it kicks in even sooner, even if you're at a higher weight than usual. And this is not your fault. It's not due to lack of control. It's not due to lack of willpower. It's your body doing what it is designed to do. We don't really know what our set point range is. We do know that when we have a healthy and balanced relationship with food, our weight stabilizes. So if you have a weight that's outside of what your body feels and functions most comfortably within, as you start to learn how to work in sync with your body, you stop binging, you start learning how to recognize and reawaken your hunger, fullness, and satiety cues, and you start to listen to and honor those, what might happen for you is you might actually release some weight that you've been carrying, but maybe your weight goes up first while you're in the process. We need to let go of the white knuckle grip of control to allow your mind to relax, your nervous system to relax, your hormones to normalize, and for your body to heal so it can get to a place where your weight wants to be. We can only do this by putting weight loss on the back burner. Another way I want you to think about this idea of putting weight loss on the back burner is to just take a step back and look at how long have I been trying to lose weight for, right? For some of you, maybe it's your whole entire life. Maybe it's since you were, 11 years old, 13 years old, you've been trying to lose weight. It's been the better part of your life. And has that focus on weight loss allowed you to lose weight and maintain it sustainably? If the answer is no, that I've always gone up and down, I've never been able to maintain it, what I really want you to take away from that is that the focus on weight loss is not helping you lose weight sustainably. And we also need to rethink how we are considering success, right? Yeah, maybe you went on Weight Watchers and you lost 50 pounds and felt like, okay, I succeeded at Weight Watchers. But honestly, if you couldn't maintain it, I don't believe that's a success. And that is not a failure on your part. That is a failure in the system of dieting. And we need to learn from that instead of continuing to try to do the same thing over and over and over again and shift focus away from weight loss towards healing our bodies and our relationships with food and our body image and get to that place of genuine, sustainable balance. Because when you get to this place where you're working in sync with your body and your body is settling to where it achieves the most optimal level of health mentally, emotionally, and physically, that feels so good internally. It can be challenging when weight gain happens though, and it's not mentally what you want your body to do, especially if your weight is above the ideal you once thought that it should get to. But that part is part of the recovery process. It's learning not only to be in sync with your body's cues physically, but learning how to be at peace with your body in the way that it wants to express itself from a weight standpoint. It might be higher than you once hoped for or what society maybe thinks you should be, and especially if you've been on and off dieting for so long, again, your set point may have increased. That is hard. That requires grieving, which is such a huge part of what I help my clients work through in my coaching program. It's so hard. But at the end of the day, it's the choice between fighting your body to stay at a lower weight than it wants to for the rest of your life, constantly white knuckling, thinking about food, guilting and shaming yourself for eating, not being able to be fully present in your life, feeling like a failure, and then inevitably binging, or learning to work with your body, finding peace and ease and balance, knowing that you're taking care of yourself mentally, physically, emotionally, being able to be present in your life, enjoy it, take care of your health, and feel good. And that's not to say that if you're coming to this place of acceptance and recovery, that if you have a health or fitness goal, you can't achieve those. You definitely can. But again, we have to pursue this process of healing. Before you can truly know your set point, you have to go through the healing process first. It sucks, I know, but it's the reality. If you have an unhealthy relationship with food, that has to be your number one priority if you ever want to achieve long-term sustainability. That has to be number one. Because what happens when you get to the other side of healing your relationship with food? It's this world of possibilities that opens up. Your goals become much more achievable because you're no longer carrying around this unhealthy relationship with food anymore. Everything else becomes possible when you tackle that relationship with food first. And so if you're listening to this and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't possibly fathom gaining one more pound, or I have all this weight that I need to lose, I want you to know that you're coming at that fear from a place of scarcity and it's keeping you stuck. It's keeping you in the place of losing weight and then regaining more back over and over again. This fear is keeping your weight cycling up over the years. Food freedom is not doing that. At the end of the day, you get to do with your healthy relationship with food whatever you want. And I know maybe it seems far-fetched, but what I see happen so often is clients getting to this place of food freedom. And yes, there might be a part of them that still wants to lose weight, but they know that it's not the time or the place for them mentally. They've found balance, they've found peace, they're feeling healthy and vibrant, so there's no need to go down that path again. They've chosen what they want to do with their food freedom, which is just to live and enjoy and know they're taking care of themselves without the need to focus on weight. For others, they may decide that with their better relationship with food, they may want to try and see if their body wants to lose some weight by playing around with food or exercise behaviors. And my philosophy is really that I'm not here to tell you what you can and cannot do with your body or with your food freedom. If you get to the end of this process and you decide that you want to pursue weight loss again, my hope is that now you can approach that from a place of understanding what is healthy, what is not, what is a red flag behavior, what's safe, what's sustainable, and what's not. Because from the place you're at right now, where everything is so confused and jumbled and your body is in diet, fight, or flight, you can't skip right to the place of making those decisions. You have to focus on mental health first, because if you bake your cake in the wrong order, it's never going to come out the way you want. You're either going to end up driving your relationship with food further into the ground, making you feel mentally and emotionally worse. And I think importantly too, when you are able to get to that place of food freedom, which again is like a lifelong journey, but when you get to that place and you decide, okay, I do want to see if my body will let go of some weight if I, you know, kind of play around with things, I think there's also this understanding that my body's only going to change as much as it wants to, and forcing it to try to change more than it wants to is only going to lead me back into the dark place, and that's not where I want to go. And I think that's really hard to wrap your head around when you're in the place that you're in right now. I also want to iterate that you can't pursue this process with this idea in the back of your mind that, oh, I'll just do this and then I'll go on another diet later. No, that is the wrong way of looking at this. It's that you're allowed to do with your food freedom what you want, but you need to surrender to the process, be open to the process, and trust the process, and not place any expectations on what will happen or what you'll do after. You need to be in the moment so you can focus on the healing, cross that bridge when you get to it. The more ahead of yourself you get with this, the harder it's going to be to actually heal. You'll end up sabotaging yourself in the process. And if I could just sit down with myself when I was struggling, if I could just sit down and have coffee and just look at myself in the eyes and talk about it, to just chat about the fear, I would do that. And I would help myself navigate that, because it kept me stuck for so long, this fear of weight gain. And I didn't have proper expectations. I thought that, you know, everything was going to be like worst case scenario. I was like catastrophizing thing in my mind. And I wish that I could just tell myself that giving myself permission to not focus on weight loss is not as scary as it seems. I'm not going to spiral. Not everything is going to happen at once, right? I'm still going to take everything moment by moment, day by day, and I need to give my body permission to do what it needs to do in order to get me mentally healthy. Because when I'm mentally healthy, I can conquer the world, and I know that you can too. It is 100% hands down true. The lie is that you're going to continue spiraling out of control and never be able to stop. That is not the case. That's coming straight from diet culture to keep you paralyzed. That does not happen. You've just got to take the first step. You've got to believe in yourself. You've got to believe that you can do this, because you can. And my goal as a dietitian, as a coach, is for you to be able to put your trust in me, that I can guide you through this process while you learn to trust yourself, because you don't right now, and that's okay. You may not be 100% sure that you can get there, but if there's any like itty bitty inkling that you want to, you can. And it's my job to guide you there. But you also have to understand that step one is absolutely putting your mental health first and putting weight loss on the back burner. Nothing can come before that. That has to happen first. It's so important. And I hope that this gives you encouragement. It helps to dissipate the lie that you're going to spiral out of control and never be able to stop, because that just does not happen. It doesn't mean that you don't care about your weight. It doesn't mean that you don't care about your health. It's okay to still want weight loss, but we have to put the active pursuit of it on the back burner. Because if you can get to that place mentally that you're not going to force yourself to lose more weight, you're not going to engage in the behaviors that would encourage rapid weight loss or our restrictive diet culture behaviors or place expectations on what will happen to your weight, when you get to that place where you're willing to let your weight hang out, that's when you can begin really diving in and doing the work that your brain and body are begging you to do to find healing and balance. That's the place you have to get to mentally. And so, yeah, what I would tell my younger self if I could go back in order to get out of this diet binge cycle is I would tell her, you got this. If you listen and if you pursue this process, even if it feels unfamiliar and intimidating and scary, even if you've been focusing on weight loss as your number one goal for so long, I know you have the courage within you to take the first step and put it aside. I'm going to put my relationship with food first and work on healing that. I'm going to put that first and I'm going to pause the focus on weight loss right now. That's what I would tell myself. The second thing that I would really do in order to get out of the diet binge cycle is I would take an objective look at how much I'm eating and how often and make sure I'm fueling my body enough. And this step is so key and something that I really did not give enough love and attention to in the beginning. One, because I was still kind of focusing on weight loss and that was still a really big goal for me. And so that kind of kept me stuck. But also, I was so used to what I was doing that it was hard to see that I wasn't eating enough. I wasn't eating regularly enough. I was still unintentionally engaging in physical restriction in many ways, and that kept me binging. And so what I would do if I were to do it all again is I would take an objective look at how much I'm eating, how often, make sure I'm getting the proper nourishment. And this is just so important because you've likely been brainwashed into thinking that you should eat certain amounts, certain portion sizes at certain times of day and not others, that you should maybe ignore your hunger, avoid fullness, only eat until you're just not hungry anymore. In so many ways, we get tuned out from our bodies and into following these rules that end up making us lose control with food and make us feel like we've failed when really our bodies never wanted all the rules in the first place. When I started off my healing journey, again, this was a big one for me because I was really into the intermittent fasting world. I was really into tracking and following a specific calorie amount. And it felt like if I ate earlier in the day, like if I ate breakfast, for example, if I ate over a certain calorie amount, that I was doing something wrong. And that guilt would come up, that shame would come up, that I've done something bad, I am bad, I've messed up. And if I were to do it again, I would look at it from my body's perspective, that for so long my body has been asking for fuel and I have been denying it of that fuel. I've been ignoring my hunger, and that has led my brain to switch off those proper hunger and fullness signals. And so what I really need to do in order to get out of the diet binge cycle is focus on mechanical eating, to focus on looking at my meal timing and asking, am I eating regularly throughout the day? Am I eating within 1 to 2 hours of waking? Am I going more than 3 to 4 hours without eating? Because if you are, that is a big red flag. And you might be like, well, Brittany, I'm not hungry throughout the day. No, this is another red flag. If you're not feeling hungry during the day, or you're going for hours and hours and hours without eating and you're totally fine, but you're still experiencing binges or overeating or impulsive moments of eating, what that says to me is your brain has switched off your hunger fullness cues, and we need to work on turning that switch back on. I want you to think about the way humans' lives were before modern civilization. There wasn't an abundance of food all the time. We couldn't just go down the road to the grocery store. We couldn't just order on Uber Eats or Postmates. There was a lack of food. We were hunter-gatherers, and so for a period of time, there was no food. We didn't have an availability and access to it. And so our brains, in order to survive, had to switch off that hunger signal to stop giving that message to our bodies that like, hey, I'm hungry, we need to eat, we need to get food, because there was none. We needed to do that for survival. And then of course there was a hunt or a collection of food. All of a sudden there's this moose that we had to eat, and it's like, okay, our brains feel safe. They can turn that switch back on. We're gonna eat as much as possible. The fullness signal was turned off still because we needed to eat and eat and eat to give our bodies enough energy to help us survive until the next time that there would be enough food. This is what happens when we diet, and we need to really work at turning that signal back on. We need to turn that switch back on, and we do so with regular eating. Even if you're not feeling hungry, we have to implement mechanical eating. And this is something that was really hard for me. This is really where the accountability would have been super, super helpful, because it's hard to eat regularly throughout the day when you're so used to skipping meals, not eating enough, whatever it may be. It's so easy to keep doing that, and it's really hard to push yourself and get into that brave space of eating more when nobody is telling you that you have to do it, when it's just you. It feels so wrong. It feels like, oh my gosh, I'm spiraling out of control. I'm eating too much. What am I doing? Like, everything in your brain tells you to not. And that is because that switch is turned off. We need to eat regularly throughout the day, again, every 3-4 hours, in order to teach our bodies that they can trust us, that we're going to feed them regularly, that there is no famine, because our bodies don't know the difference between there being an actual famine or a lack of food and us just restricting ourselves or being on a diet or cutting out carbs or whatever it is. Our bodies think that there is a famine, and so we need to eat regularly. Even if you're not a breakfast person, I want you to eat breakfast. And that might not necessarily be forever, but for right now, it needs to happen in order for your brain to feel comfortable turning that hunger switch back on so that you can eat regularly, stop thinking about food so much, stop the binges, stop the overeating so that you can feel just normal and at peace with food again. We need to do this mechanical eating before intuitive eating, because again, if that switch is turned off, you can't rely on your hunger and fullness to tell you when to eat and when to stop eating. Those cues are out of whack. They're not reliable. We need to do the mechanical eating first. The goal with all this is to help your body feel that normal hunger and fullness so that you can ultimately figure out what eating pattern does work for you. But in the meantime, we need to go back to basics. Just go back to the regularity. Go back to maybe even looking at, you know, a clock or setting timers so that you don't forget, but eating every 3-4 hours regularly throughout the day. This is something that if I were to do it again, I would start doing this from day one, because genuinely this makes such a massive difference in helping stop binges and helping get out of that diet binge cycle. The third thing that I would do is really work on my beliefs about food and my body and health. This is a huge one, because I know that I had a ton of stories about health and what's healthy and what's not, stories about food and weight and beauty and myself and my place in the world, and I'm sure you do too. And they're all playing into how you eat, how you take care of yourself, how you think about yourself, and so much more. We need to take a big step back, look at all of those beliefs, all of those limiting beliefs that are hanging around, because they are keeping you stuck in diet culture and feeling like it is the answer. They're keeping you from trusting yourself, relying on yourself, and feeling normal around food. And it's important to acknowledge those beliefs are from diet culture. They're from patriarchal values. They're playing into you feeling like you need to change your body in order to feel worthy and loved and accepted and enough. If you feel like you want to lose weight because you want to feel more confident or feel better about yourself, I want you to go deeper than that. It's not just about that. There is more there. We need to peel back the layers and keep asking why. What does that allow me to do? Why do I need to do that or feel that? Because I want to, or because I can. Keep on going. Keep peeling. Get to what's underneath. Because also, hitting a goal weight or a goal size and thinking that that's going to make you happy, I promise you that is a lie. It's a goalpost that you're trying to reach that will always continue moving further and further away every single time you get there. It'll feel good for a bit, you'll get that validation, you'll be happy with it, but after a while, because you've been focusing on weight loss as a means to feel better about yourself, the desire keeps coming back. It's never enough. The goalpost keeps on moving. Now it's, oh, I could lose more, I still don't like my arms or my stomach, or now this is an issue or that. Getting to a place where you feel confident and good about yourself because you found a relationship with food and exercise that feels good, and you have your mental health and your mental energy in check, mental real estate in place, that is bliss. That is beauty. That's the mountaintop that's available to you. But you have to challenge that idea that weight loss is the only way to get there, that changing your body or looking a certain way is automatically going to bring you to that place of peace. It's just not true. And if you've ever had the experience where you look at pictures of yourself from a few years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever it is, and you're like, oh, I wish I looked like that again. But you remember in that photo not feeling good about yourself or feeling like, oh, I hate this or that about my body or I want to lose more weight. But now you can look back and say, oh, I looked so good. I wish I looked that way. That shows so much that the goalpost just keeps moving, that it's never enough, that we really do trick ourselves into thinking that if I just lose X number of pounds, if I just get back to this body, that I would feel good about myself, that, oh no, now this time I would appreciate it. You won't. You will temporarily, but ultimately you won't. It's the same thing. It's the same cycle that repeats itself over and over and over again. Changing the way that you look is not going to reliably help you feel good about yourself. It's just not true. And I know there are concerns about comfort and feeling good in your body and, you know, I want to lose weight so that I feel more comfortable, and that is completely valid. But I also really want you to take a step outside of the weight focus and challenge it, because it becomes really narrow when we only focus on weight. It brings all your attention to one factor that could possibly help you feel more comfortable or feel better, and it forces you to ignore all the other factors that are out there that could possibly and would likely really help and make a big difference in how you feel and how comfy you are in your body. Things like working on your flexibility and on your mobility, improving your fitness level, building your strength, getting clothes that actually fit and are comfy and don't dig in or cut you off in weird places. Those pieces all help you feel better in your body and better about yourself. And we kind of ignore these things when we are in this tunnel vision with weight loss and believing that is the only way to feel better. Your life purpose isn't to spend 90 to 95% of your time and mental energy every single day worrying about food and body issues. That is not how you were designed. That's not what your purpose is. And if you're willing to lean into the struggle instead of avoiding it or suppressing it or trying to numb it, if you're willing to lean into it, on the other side, you will experience a life of freedom and joy and bliss and peace in your body and peace with food. And that might seem totally unfathomable right now, and that's okay, but that's waiting for you. And I know, regardless of how long you've struggled, I've worked with women who have struggled for 50 plus years and they found their freedom faster than they ever thought possible. Regardless of what your history is or how long you've been struggling, this is available to you too, but you have to choose to lean into the struggle and challenge those beliefs that you have about food and your body and yourself. Really take a hard look at, what are the stories that I tell myself about health, about bodies, about weight? And ask, are they serving me? Is this really what I think, or is this really what I want to think? Is this even serving me at all? Chances are it's not, but we keep going along with those stories because that's the narrative that plays through our head and we're so used to it. And it's okay to struggle with this. That's part of being human. And you don't have to beat yourself up for the fact that you're struggling, because hey, welcome to the club. You're human. We all struggle. And if this is your struggle right now, accept it. Be like, hey, this is what I'm dealing with, and I believe that I can conquer it. Or at least Brittany tells me that I can conquer it. And then you lean in, you take that courageous first step, and you just put one foot in front of the other until this is the thing of the past and you're able to close this chapter. But it really does start with looking at all your beliefs about yourself, your health, your weight, beauty, relationships, love, fitness, food, everything. Asking where you got those beliefs. Where have you seen examples in your life or maybe in the media or whatever that doesn't support those beliefs? And asking yourself, what do I believe? What do I want to believe? How do I want to think about this? What feels balanced and supportive and truly in my best interest? And I think a really helpful question to ask too is, how would I want my best friend or my child or a close loved one think about this? Those are your true beliefs. Challenging those belief systems that are limiting you to living within diet culture is so important and something I really want you to start doing right now as soon as you're done this episode. The fourth thing that I would do if I were to go back and get out of the diet binge cycle all over again is I would create a plan to normalize trigger foods. As we talked about before, that belief of, if I let myself eat what I want, I'm going to lose control, I'll only eat foods that are bad for me. That's a valid concern, because every time you've let yourself just eat and you've let go of this white knuckle grip of control, you've totally lost control and you've binged. So over time, you develop this belief that I can't control myself around food and this is just how I am, which again, in the last step, we want to challenge all of those beliefs. with normalizing trigger foods, it's important to acknowledge this isn't how you naturally are with food. Certain foods are not inherently trigger foods or binge foods. You can control yourself around sugar or pizza or whatever it is. And that's really the first part of normalizing trigger foods here and reintroducing them into your life, is to challenge that belief that you are this way inherently or that you can't control yourself around certain foods. Because believing those plays into self-sabotage. It plays into becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. You were not born a binger. Certain foods are not just binge foods. It's a learned behavior. It's a habit. And just like you learned it, you can unlearn it. So one of the ways we normalize trigger foods is partly through this process called food habituation, so that you can just hang out in the middle in this place of balance, ease, and flow, and peace with food. I know food habituation sounds very sciencey and kind of clinical, but really what it means is that the more you expose yourself to a food, especially if it used to be off limits, the less power it has over you over time, because we just get used to it being there. Diets don't give us peace with food in the long run because they prevent food habituation. When there are rules and moralizing language around food, like good or bad, or when we place a lot of restrictions on our eating, those foods will always feel like they're on a pedestal in our lives. And as a result, we feel like we can't control ourselves around them. So the more we offer ourselves permission around a certain food, the more normalized it will become in our lives, and it's no longer put on this pedestal or has a lot of rules surrounding it. So there's no reason to overeat it all now or binge, because it's always going to be there. You can create an abundance mindset around it, which removes the scarcity and the urgency, so that you can just be chill around it and at ease and at peace. And this is one of the many reasons why diets don't work and don't give us peace with food in the long run. It prevents food habituation. And you might even want to think back on some of your past or current diets to see how they prevented this process of food habituation. For example, let's say that you were doing low carb and you were demonizing carbohydrates. You were cutting them out. By using all the moralizing language around food, like carbs are bad and I shouldn't have them and I can't eat them, by not allowing yourself to have them, you prevented food habituation. And so when you finally did give in and have them, you might have binged, gone overboard, felt really guilty about it, felt really shameful. Those foods with those labels and with those restrictions are always going to feel like they're put on a pedestal in our lives. And as a result, we're going to feel like those foods have a lot of power over us, or that we can't control ourselves around those foods when we're exposed to them. There are a lot of different ways to go about food habituation. Everybody does it a little bit differently. There's no one right way, but I think it is very important to have a plan for how you're going to go about it, what you're going to do, and how you're going to respond if you go overboard, because that will inevitably happen and that's okay. Just going in blind and being like, I'm going to give myself unconditional permission, is not a helpful way to go about it, because it can lead to a lot of guilt and shame, which plays into mental restriction, makes the honeymoon phase with food last a whole lot longer, and it makes it more uncomfortable than it needs to be. That's only part of the plan. It's not going to help you move through it thoughtfully. So we need to start off by making a plan, starting with checking off the boxes of 1. Am I eating enough? Am I eating regularly throughout the day, ideally every 3-4 hours? Are my portion sizes adequate to get me through the 3-4 hour mark, right? Am I feeling really hungry when the next meal rolls around? We need to address that first. 2, do I have enough variety in what I'm eating right now? I know we haven't maybe branched out a ton yet. We haven't started to challenge trigger foods, but within what feels safe, do I have variety? Am I eating different foods each day? I'm not eating the same thing day in, day out. Because if you're doing that, even if you don't necessarily realize it, you are going to get bored. You are probably bored with what you're eating, and you're just used to it. You're just doing it because you're going through the motions. And so if you don't have variety, if you don't have an expanded palate, if you're not eating different things for like breakfast, lunch, and dinner every single day, or at least have a bit of a rotation of different things, when you introduce that trigger food, because you're not feeling satisfied from the lack of variety, that food that you find really satisfying, that new food that you previously binged on, is going to feel really, really hard to just eat in balance with everything else. So that's a really important piece to look at too. The third piece is, am I getting enough fat in my diet and enough protein and enough fiber? These are food components that are going to keep you feeling full, which also helps you feel satisfied. And this is so key, because if you're going through testing trigger foods, but you're not eating enough, you're not feeling satisfied at all, and your body's not getting enough of what it needs, you are going to sabotage your efforts to habituate yourself to the food you're trying to normalize. you're likely going to end up going overboard and binging on that food for much longer than you really actually need to. Your body's not getting what it needs, and so you're going to be hardwired to want more and more and more of that trigger food, which is going to be triggering in itself, and it's going to trigger you. You want to go into the food habituation process fed and satisfied as much as possible. After we've checked off those boxes, asked those questions, the next is asking yourself, which style of habituation do you want to go with? There are three styles of food habituation, going from the most all-in to the slowest and most stepwise approach. The first is total unconditional permission, meaning you are going to just allow yourself to have all the foods without any restriction as much as you want. This style is not for everybody, but it can be helpful to kind of get it out of the way, get it over and done with, just put all the foods in your life at the same time, get that honeymoon phase over and done with. The next style is one food at a time, like chocolate, for example. Maybe you're like, okay, I'm just going to work on chocolate. I'm going to normalize chocolate. I'm going to bring it into my life, have it, and kind of get over it, bring it off the pedestal, put it on an even playing field with all the rest of the foods. And then I'm going to move on to another food like chips, for example, or bagels, for example. This is a style that is helpful if you want to push yourself, but you maybe don't want to feel so overwhelmed or feel like you're losing control. This is a nice way to do it, to just do one food at a time. The next style is to do a more stepwise approach. And this is the one that takes the longest. It's really, really slow. And essentially what it is food chaining your way to the scary foods. So let's say chocolate is something that you used to binge on a ton, and so you never have it anymore. And every time you do, you always binge. Where we might start with this, if let's say a Lindt chocolate bar feels like your ultimate weakness, to start off with maybe a granola bar that has chocolate chips in it, or a chocolate flavored protein bar. Something that's basically really safe, but perhaps just a step away from super safe. You get really comfy with that, you normalize that, and then you move on to something a little more challenging, like maybe those individually packaged Brookside chocolate blueberries. You work on that, you bring that in, you normalize that, you get comfy with it, and then you move on to something else that maybe more closely resembles Lindt, like chocolate bark thins that they have at Costco. At least they have them in Canada. You work on that, you normalize that, and then the Lindt chocolate. Now, of course, as you can probably tell, this takes a lot more time, but it can be a way to really build your confidence on the way to challenging a fear food. And in your journey too, you might say, okay, I am going to start with type 3. I'm going to really work on that. I'm going to feel more empowered. And then I'm going to move on to type 2 and then be like, okay, I'm actually just going to give myself permission with all foods because I have the confidence now. I know I can do it. I know I'm not going to totally fall off the deep end, but it's really up to you, your personality, what feels brave to you, because we always want it to feel that way. We never want it to feel like, oh my God, this is so much. I can't handle it. This is so overwhelming. That's not helpful. You can't learn when you're in that place. We don't want to go there. The next part of the plan, once you've decided on the style, is to decide when you'll introduce those foods and how often. And listen up, because this is really important. Make sure to have the food with other foods that are safe, filling, and satisfying. Have it in your usual meal rhythm. For example, I normally have an afternoon snack at 3, so okay, I'm going to include the food I'm working on in that snack. Don't go and have the chocolate on its own for your snack, or just have it at a random time of day. That could make it feel like you're doing something wrong, which you're not. But we want to be really mindful of keeping this process feel as brave as possible and not sending you into a place that feels like, uh-oh, I've gone too far, I've messed up, may as well binge now and start over tomorrow. So just go with your rhythm you've created and bring it into a snack or a meal. Have it with it. For example, if you're having it with lunch, you're having some chocolate with lunch, don't keep the chocolate in the cupboard and then wait until you finish your lunch and then go get it. Put it on the plate right away. Have it be there the whole entire time. Do the same thing every day. Have it for lunch every day. Continue with regular eating the rest of the day. You can even do it multiple times a day if you want to. If you want to bring it with lunch and with dinner, that's totally okay too. Give yourself permission while you're doing this. Remind yourself that the food is in your life forever. It's not going anywhere, and it's going to be a part of your snack or your meal tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. Literally before you eat whatever it is, say to yourself, I have permission to eat this and enjoy it. I am allowed. And if you have a hard time believing that, for giving yourself permission, use me. Say, Brittany gives me permission to eat this and I'm going to go with it. Sink into the pleasure of eating the food and enjoy it. The last thing that I would do if I were to do it all over again, as I was saying before, is to get support straight away. Your book is in the process of being written and you've just had a hell of a chapter, right? The highs, the lows, the breakthrough, the courage, the fear, that makes a story exciting. So don't beat yourself up if you're struggling. That's what makes life purposeful, is the struggle. We grow through it, we're sharpened by the struggle. And of course, nobody wants to have the struggle, but if it's your reality right now, be okay with it. Lean into it. Don't be afraid of it, because you have the power to evolve out of it. But don't be afraid to ask for support in the process. So often I have clients come to me who are like, I've been trying this on my own and I'm so frustrated. I'm doubting the process, but I still really want this. I want food freedom. And that's okay if you wait until that point to reach out for help, but also know that you don't have to wait until this point to reach out, because likely you're going to spend a lot longer in the process than if you had just reached out for help sooner to get a plan, to get strategy, to get personalized advice that is just for you and tailored to you and your challenges. I wish I had reached out for help from day one, because I would have just avoided so many speed bumps and frustrations and moments that felt like failures along the way. There's no shame in asking for help, because truly this process is hard. It's hard to do it on your own because you can't see your blind spots. It's hard to keep yourself accountable, but I can see those things. I can see those blind spots. I can help you be accountable. That's what I'm here for, to just help you build up your toolbox of strategies to tackle those speed bumps so you can move forward and onward and upward and feel normal and confident around food and with yourself again. And that's really what happens inside the Empowered Eaters Collective, is you get a step-by-step guide for how to heal your relationship with food and your body. You get a community of others who get it and know exactly what you're going through. Everyone is so supportive and welcoming, and it's truly just such a beautiful, safe space. And I really encourage you to try it out and see for yourself. You get weekly group calls, access to my program and other courses, a platform to connect with others and ask questions, and new content every month. Currently, it's only $37 a month, but I am going to be raising the price soon, because I definitely priced it too low for all the value you get. But if you get in at this price, it will remain the same for the entire time you're a member. So head to brittanyallisonrd.com/membership for more info. I'm also going to put the link in the show notes so that you can sign up today. Thank you so much for hanging out with me on another episode of the Food Freedom Life podcast. If you enjoyed what I'm doing here, it would also mean the world to me if you could subscribe to the show, if you left me an awesome review, and maybe even shared it with a friend or on your social media. This is how I get the message into the world. And with your help, I can inspire more people across the globe to end the fight with food and body. So thank you for being a part of that mission, and I will see you next time.